This episode is sponsored by Realtor.com, who wants you to take advantage of your free profile on Realtor.com by claiming and completing your free profile, adding a photo, and all of the information that puts you head and shoulders above the competition. You're on your way to receiving free leads, helping search engines find you, and staying top of mind with past clients. To learn more about claiming your free profile, go to realtor.com/profile.
Welcome to the Real View Podcast, where Ohio realtors connect you to innovators and influencers, keeping you with the real view of real estate. Whether you're a broker, agent, first-time homebuyer, industry leader, or just happen to stumble upon our podcast today, you can expect to hear tips, tools, tricks, interesting information, and so much more from the experts in Ohio's real estate game.
All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Real View Podcast. I am your host, Allison Wiley. Joining me today, my special guest is Zoe Liston. She is owner appraiser at ZCL Appraisals. She graduated from Cornell University and has been a licensed realtor for almost 30 years, a certified residential real property appraiser for 25 years, and a speaker in both industries for over 20 years. Her speaking career has been primarily for the Minnesota Association of Realtors, local realtor associations across Minnesota, the National Association of Realtors, Kaplan, and North Star MLS. She specializes in teaching realtors how to understand the appraisal world, including how to read appraisals, best practices for interacting with appraisers, and how to accurately measure homes. She is also the local North Star MLS matrix expert for the Minneapolis Area Association of Realtors and teaches all of their programming specific to matrix. Zoe has a passion for bridging industry knowledge gaps to aid in elevating the experience for agents and consumers alike. She is an interactive educator who uses humor and levity when she speaks, which makes her sessions engaging and educational. She hopes to continue building her legacy of breaking down industry communication barriers one conference at a time as she makes her way across the U.S. In her downtime, Zoe can be found out in the water on her kayak, with friends, on the road, in her midlife crisis purchase Harley Davidson motorcycle, or at home snuggling and cleaning up after her many foster dogs, which we were just talking about, making sure they were quiet for the recording today. So Zoe, what an amazing career and bio, and welcome onto the show.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here. This is a great program to put on.
Yeah, and we're really excited to be having you on because the topic of in the title of today's show is Appraisals 101 for Realtors. And we are going to dive into this world of appraisals. Who better else to be talking about this topic than you, Zoe? So really excited to be hearing from you and learning a little bit more about your experience and background in this such an important topic. But before we get started on that, I want to know a little bit more about you. Tell us your career background. I know I went through some of the things and your accomplishments of what you do now, but tell us about you and your career background and how you got started in real estate.
Well, I kind of fell into it. I grew up in Indiana, so I've been to Kings Island many, many times. I'm in college in New York, and I was working out there in the hotel industry. And I decided I wanted to move back to the Midwest. I picked Minnesota out of the blue, hadn't been here since I was 5 years old or something on a camping trip. And I bought a house. And I thought, well, that was fun. That was really fun. So I kind of stumbled into it and started selling real estate. But selling is hard. I'm not a salesperson. And somebody asked me, hey, I need another appraiser working for my company. Would you be interested in appraising? I'm like, sure, talk to me about it. And I totally fell in love with appraising. It is still real estate. You still get to see the houses. You're still involved in an exciting industry that people love, but you don't have to deal with other people's emotions. So it's the much more logical side. We go collect facts. We put the facts together and we solve a little problem at the end and poof, we get a report done. So I've been a realtor this whole time, but I identify as an appraiser and I've done both. And then the teaching is just so much fun because I do both sides. It's easy to talk about what one side does versus the other because both industries tend to complain about the other one and you complain about something you don't understand. So I understand both sides.
So you help kind of bridge that gap. And that's why I think, I'm so excited to have you on, is because you do help kind of both sides see each other's perspective and see, where each other is coming from. And I want to talk about that as we get into the show. But first, I think we should start at the beginning. Why are appraisals so important? And could you share with us a little bit of the history and background of appraisals?
Sure. So appraisals didn't used to be regulated whatsoever. It was in the 80s that things happened after the S&P, not S&P, the securities and the savings and loans that they went under. So when big financial crisis always changes everything. So appraisers exist to protect the mortgage people. The appraisers exist to be an independent person looking at the property, understanding the property we don't have anything involved in the value as far as any vested interest in it. We don't care what the property sells for. We don't care what it's worth. We just look at the details and look at the facts to see what it's worth. So we are independent to protect the mortgage company. Your lenders may not even be in the state and they don't know anything about the neighborhoods. They don't know anything about what the style of homes are. And so we are their advocate. We are their eyes and their ears. And we know the local markets and we go into the houses and say, oh, you're going to lend $500,000 on this house? Well, you might not want to do that. Okay. So we don't work for the realtors. I've had so many realtors say to me, oh, but your job is to justify our sales price, right? I'm like, No, it's not to justify your sales price. And so many buyers think that it's theirs because they paid for it. So buyers think that they should be able to control the appraiser and they should be able to ask for whatever they want. You know what? The buyers pay for the loan officer's commission also out of the fees that they pay, but they don't get to decide what time they show up for work. So it's just the cost of doing business. The only reason that they know they pay for it is because of disclosures to make sure that they know what they're paying for it, that they know where their money is going. So our clients are the loan officers specifically to protect their investments so that the banks don't have issues with going bankrupt themselves.
Yeah, no, I think that's interesting. And the relationship between, realtors and the appraisers. Talk to us about some of the maybe misconceptions, misunderstandings. And we talked, a little bit about it a moment ago of, how each side views each other. But what misunderstandings and misconceptions exist out there about appraisals? And what do you want realtors to know about appraisals?
One thing realtors should know is that it sounds callous, but I don't care what the value is, right? As a realtor, if you're the listing agent, you are trying to get the most money possible for your seller. That's fine. That's your job. But for me, I'm trying to find who the typical buyer is, what a typical buyer would pay, because if that buyer who buys this property defaults and the bank has to foreclose, they need to find somebody else who's willing to pay that much money again to get their money back. So I'm not looking for that one unusual buyer who will pay anything. That's the listing agent's job, to get as much money as possible. Mine is to be practical as far as what's the typical, what the typical buyer would pay. So we don't care what the price is. We're not trying to come in low. We're not trying to come in high. We're just looking at the facts. So that's one thing. And also, I don't know the real estate market in Ohio, but here we've got basements at almost every house. So we always hear, oh, appraisers don't count basements for anything. Appraisers ignore basements. It doesn't matter anything. Yes, it does. If you read the appraisal report, there is a section for above ground finished square footage, above ground room counts. And then there's a whole section about the basement. How big is the basement? How much of it is finished and how many rooms are there? We count basements. They're just on a different field. So if I say a house has got three bedrooms and two baths and it's 1500 square feet, the realtors are saying, no, it's got three bedrooms and four baths and it's 3000 square feet, because you're including the basement. We include it. It's just a separate line. We handle them separately. And we handle them separately because they generally have different value. More people generally pay more money for the above ground finished square footage than they do for below ground. So that's just a misconception of somebody who hasn't carefully read through the appraisal report.
Yeah. And reading that report, that's a whole different beast, right?
Right. And it actually got much harder in 2014. And real estate is local. Your market is different from mine and your abbreviations and what you're expecting is different. But in 2014, Fannie Mae wanted to make it more uniform. So there's something called UAD, Uniform Appraisal Data Set. And they require certain fields to be filled out with their exact abbreviations and exact punctuation. which makes it harder for the layperson to read. It makes it easier for the computers to read. It makes it harder for the layperson to read. So you may be looking at our appraisal report and thinking, what do all these initials mean? And the view says A. What's A for view? A means adverse. Sounds like a good view because it's an A, but it means it's an adverse view, like if you face a gas station or something. So it did get harder to read. In every appraisal report, there should be a couple of pages of definitions of what all those abbreviations mean, including the definitions of what condition means. We have conditions C1, C2, C3, C4, C5, and C6. Those are condition ratings. C1 is brand new property, never been lived in. C2 is older property, but totally remodeled. Most houses fall into the C3 and C4 range. If you've got a C5 or a C6, you're not going to get a loan. So it got harder to understand the appraisals when it went so that they can read them by computer. So I feel for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes, you know, just another thing that makes the job of a realtor tough, right? Now we have to read complicated appraisal forms and explain it to our clients. And yeah, absolutely. So you kind of touched on there some of the factors that go into appraisals. What are some of the biggest things that we should be aware of that appraisers are thinking about when it comes to how they're determining home's value? And talk to us, walk us through kind of what all goes into appraisals and what are what's your appraiser going to be looking at as they come to a property?
Well, when I get an order for an appraisal, the first thing I do is look it up on MLS and see if it's been listed. You know, if it's a sale one, it is listed. And I read through all the information so I get an idea of what the house is like before I go out there. And the reason I do that is because I have to go take pictures of all the comps that I use. So it makes my life more efficient if I have a good idea of the property before I go out there, so I can pull a bunch of comps. And then after I see the house, I can figure out which ones I should go take pictures of. Of course, real estate, we're looking at the neighborhood. So where your property is going to matter. When I pull comps, I'm looking at houses that are similar style. So if it's a two-story, I'm going to look for two stories. And I'm surprised at how many realtors don't get the same style. And I'm also looking for ones that are similar in above ground finished square footage. Again, I'm separating the above ground out from the below ground. Now, I will also look for if I've got a finished basement in the subject property, I will look for properties with finished basements. But I want to find ones that have similar square footage above ground, because that makes the similar size box, right? If I've got a one-story house that has 1,500 square feet on the main, let me do 1,000 square feet so I can do the math. 1,000 square feet on the main floor, and another one next door that has 1,000 square feet on the main floor, but also has 1,000 square feet finished in the basement. The second house is not twice as big as the first house. It's not worth twice as much. It's the same size box, but with just a different item going on in the basement. So if I have two houses that have similar square footage, and we try to stay within a 20% range, so if I've got that 1,000 square feet, I shouldn't look at comps smaller than 800 or bigger than 1,200. And that's another mistake that I often find in realtors. And again, this one I wouldn't call a mistake. It's just a different way of looking at things, that we are separating it out and we are looking for ones pretty close in size. When I get out to the house, I measure the whole exterior of the home. We measure the houses, we get the square footage. And I don't know how your MLS does it as far as coming up with the square footage, but other MLSs across the country, some won't let the appraisers measure. Some insist that you have to take the tax record information. Our tax record information is not that great. But I measure the whole house. And as I'm measuring, I'm taking a look at what kind of siding you have, what kind of condition is in, what's the view look like, what kind of shape is our patios and decks in. And then when I come inside, some people get upset how little time the appraiser spends in the house. If I'm walking into a floor plan that I've been in literally hundreds of times, because we have neighborhoods like that, I can very quickly walk into a room. Yep, bedroom carpet, good condition. Yep, kitchen vinyl flooring, good condition. And I've got check boxes and I can fill it out very quickly and we take photos. But we are making note of what condition every flooring is, all the walls are. We're making notes about what kind of appliances you have, decks, patios, what shape the roof is in. But it doesn't necessarily take a ton of time. So that can upset some people.
That's a good misconception that, like, you know, entrust your appraiser. If they have seen something similar, then they're able to go through that in a fairly quick manner. And it might not take that time intensive amount, you know, to really get to know and get a good sense of feel for the house. I think that's
a simple one story house. I can measure and be in and out of in 15 minutes. And I didn't miss anything. I've got pictures and I've got notes and I've got check boxes. And again, I know the floor plan.
Yeah. I think that's a really good point to mention, that it might not take as long as some people may think. How often do you see the discrepancies from, you know, what the realtor thinks or what the seller might think, and then what you or a similar appraiser is actually appraising the house at. Does that happen often, or what does that look like when you run into those differences?
So in a stable, normal market, almost always appraisals are well within range of where the sale price is. When it's a normal market, realtors know when you start going out and seeing 10, 12, 15 houses with your buyer, you start to know exactly what ones are going to be worth as you're looking at them. You know if you walk into a house and it's overpriced because you are now the expert in this, that neighborhood and the style of home your buyer's looking at. And the buyers are the same way. So in a typical standard market where it's not a frenzy, usually the house has figured itself out before I ever get there. If the house is listed for $300, but it's really only worth $250, anybody who can afford $300 is going to walk in and say, ew, I'm not buying that. And anybody who can afford $250 won't ever see the house because they shouldn't be looking at something $50,000 above. So the price usually works itself out before we ever get there. So for years and years and years, when the market was pretty stable, almost every appraisal was relatively easy. And by easy, I mean that I didn't have to fight anybody. I didn't have anybody complaining about the value and things like that because it worked itself out. Now, during COVID and these crazy times when the market is just spiking and people are willing to pay $50,000 extra for a house, we as appraisers, we can't make that happen. And again, it's not our job to make that happen. When prices are going up really fast, keep in mind that we are looking at history. We are always looking at houses that sold because those are the only ones we have proof of what they sold for. You can list a house for $1 million, but it might not sell until it gets down to 600,000. If I use it as a comp at $1 million, it screws up everything. So we put almost all of our weight on sold properties. So we're always a little bit behind. So that can make it tough when the market is spiking a lot. Now, there are times when the prices are going up, and I've done appraisals where I go into a house and I say, okay, this house, the highest priced house in the neighborhood sold for $300. This house sold for $320, but you know what? For the last year, prices have been going up. For the last year, there's been almost no inventory. This price is justifiable. And if I explain it all out with statistics and facts to the underwriters will often let it go through. So it's not our job to let it go to do that. It's not our job to justify a higher price, but there are very good times when it is completely justifiable. We have good stats on if prices are increasing and if inventory is bad. We've got very low inventory in our area and people are multiple offers all the time for years now.
Yeah, so that was going to be kind of my next question, knowing what we went through in COVID and seeing home prices rocket and seeing, as you mentioned, you know, people offering, you know, tens of thousands of dollars over asking prices and maybe, you know, buying a house that they're overpaying for. How are you expecting appraisals to kind of work moving forward? Now, what is the future of that looking like, knowing that we're coming out of such a crazy time in COVID? Those crazy prices and overpayments.
It's definitely causing some problems. First of all, the appraisal is done for the lender, but it does help protect the buyer also, right? If the lender won't give them the loan because the house isn't worth it, it helps protect the buyer, even though they're frustrated and they want the house. So more and more of those houses went with appraisal waivers, or they had to come in with cash down, or, you know, once again, rich people can do whatever they want. Poor people can't. So if you have an extra $100,000, just buy whatever house you want. And we always say in the appraisal world, if you want to overpay for the house, fine, but you got to use your own money.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah. Save money helps you overpay for something. Sorry.
Yeah. But part of the problem now is that prices have come down a little bit. So now those people who bought a house overpriced and think, oh, houses always goes up. Housing is a great investment. And they're trying to refinance or they're trying to sell. And house prices have gone down and now they're stuck. So, and that's what happened in 07 when people got stuck and they couldn't sell their houses. Now it's not that bad this time. Though I know a lot of appraisers across the country are seeing some foreclosures coming up, but if you pay too much for your house, you got to plan to stay there for a while. So, cause the housing prices are coming down and things like that. Part of some of the issues that pop up for realtors also is that there's so much news and so much HGTV and so much where people think that their house is an investment. It can be, and it can be worth a lot of money, but it also should be someplace that you want to live. So buy it because you want to live there. Buy it, remodel it the way you're going to use the house. Don't worry that you have to have four bedrooms for anything. If, you know, you, plan on it as a safe place for your money if you're going to be there for a while. Don't try to make money off your house because you cannot control what's going to happen to the prices.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And I know I've talked to numerous realtors who say, you know, the remodels that you think are going to bring in a lot of money, a lot of times you don't need to do these crazy remodels to increase the value of the house. I've heard realtors say that on a couple different occasions. So I think it's a huge misconception out there. Everyone's like, well, let me redo my kitchen and I've increased the home value, you know, by this much.
Because HGTV tells them that you can get it done in 2 days. We'll put a new roof on the house and it's worth $20,000 more. No, it's not. A house has to have a roof. And oh, I saw some hideous houses during the whole gray phase, the prison gray with everything. Oh, we had people going in and rehabbing these beautiful 1950s homes with gorgeous hardwood. And they put that plastic gray stuff, the luxury vinyl plank that's supposed to be so pretty, they put it over hardwood floors. They diminished the value because they were going with trendy stuff. Now, it's not to say that you shouldn't rehab homes. Definitely what we're looking at as appraisers when we walk in is condition. Okay. That you walk in and you know if a house is in good shape, because we know buyers are going to pay less if they have to do a lot for it. But be careful what you do. And there's always the problem of value, price versus value. We live in Minnesota where water is very important. People will pay anything to live on a lake, but for some reason they don't pay anything for a pool. So you can spend $70,000, $80,000 on a pool and you hold an open house. And the first thing people ask is, what does it cost to fill in the pool? So in lower price ranges, and lower meaning anything under a million, a pool is a negative. But people put it in because they love it, and which is great. They should love it and they should want to use it and have it, that be their family way of life. But they shouldn't put it in expecting money back. They shouldn't put it in and then be surprised that they're not getting money back on it. And there's a lot of things like that. People spend extra money on some fancy stuff. Like there's still people advertising what kind of cable work they have going through their house. I can't even think of the terms, but like Cat One cable or whatever. Like nobody cares. Everything's wireless. So we're always looking at what's most important to the typical buyer. Now that can get sort of weird also, because the stereotypical buyer for a suburban house is the female's perspective. NAR used to have some statistics and I haven't looked lately, but it was something like 97% of home purchases have a woman involved. And it's one of the places where women have more say than other places. You know, if you do an open house, you're standing in the kitchen waiting for people. The woman comes to the kitchen, the man goes to the garage. The garage is an empty box with nothing interesting out there. But the things that add value to homes are very often what the stereotypical female likes. Nice bathrooms, a nice primary bathrooms, primary suite, and nice kitchen. It's kind of icky to talk in terms like that, but that's where most of the value is. It's not the fact that you got heated floors in your garage. Sorry to roll my eyes on that.
No, I'm here for it. No, I think that's super interesting. And Dave, I just think it's all fascinating to learn psychology behind this, what people want. I mean, I'm sure you never have a dull day, in your work. Sure, it's always something, you know, new and exciting and different. And although, yes, you're walking into homes who maybe who are similar, but there's so much that goes into it.
That's part of the reason I love real estate. I was in a house just the other day in a super expensive neighborhood, an old neighborhood, 1920s neighborhood. And the house is small because houses were, but they have remodeled the kitchen in the 1920s era. So all the rounded cabinets, it looks like an airplane from the 20s or something. It's very cool. It's just beautiful, but it's going to be hard to sell just because most people can't live in a house that small for that kind of money. But it's very cool. Yeah, I love seeing all the houses. That's why I'm glad that even though I'm not very good at sales, I'm glad I get to still be in the real estate industry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I know I'm a person who loves homes too. And I love like looking and peering into windows and stuff on like evening walks. Like, what's this house look? You know, so I'm like, maybe I should go and do appraising. Who knows? Go see the inside of some of these cool homes that I love looking at. So
we don't have a winter this year, but we have an event every winter called the Luminary Lopet, big event that goes on. And at night, then one of the frozen lakes, there's thousands of luminaries and everybody hikes or walks or skis or snowshoes on the lake. And I do it because, again, it's an expensive neighborhood. It's the neighborhood where the Mary Tyler Moore house is. So old fashioned, big 3-story houses. And man, it's just fun to see all the houses lit up at night.
It is. They're so pretty and beautiful. And yeah, it's fun. I enjoy it. I enjoy it as well. I'm going to go back to the relationship between realtors and appraisers. How can we best work with each other? What does a healthy relationship with our appraisers, you know, look like? And do you see like realtors having kind of their go-to appraiser that they're always sending to their properties? And talk to a little bit about that relationship aspect between realtors and their appraisers.
Okay. Well, of course, it varies depending on who you are. Keep in mind that realtors and appraisers both belong to the National Association of Realtors. So even though appraisers may not all be salespeople like I am, we are all technically realtors. And so your code of ethics applies to how you treat the appraiser also. Even though I know after being with a buyer forever and you're sick of having them in your car and you finally got them a house and that stupid appraiser ruins the deal for you. Don't talk like that. Okay. So treat us with respect. I used to speak at an office all the time. The loan officer always spoke before me. And every time he spoke, he had a cartoon on the front wall of two guys hanging from shackles in a dungeon. What are you in here for? What are you in here for? And the loan officer says, I'm in here for miscalculating the GSE or whatever. And the appraiser says, or the realtor says, I looked an appraiser in the eye. So during the last housing crash, where there were some rules put into place, people misunderstood them a little bit and went a little bit overboard. Yes, you can speak to an appraiser. Yes, we are people. Yes, we won't, you know, we're not as celebrities where you're not allowed to look us in the eye and talk to us. What you can't do is you can't threaten us. You can't tell us what value you want. You can't say, the family is going to be homeless if you don't come in at the value we need. But we do need information from you. So when I come out to the house, I've got all the information in MLS and I get to see that house. But unless you put in MLS what year the kitchen was remodeled and what year the bathroom was remodeled, and sometimes we need to know what kind of material you used because the flooring is a new kind of material we haven't seen, or the counters are something unusual. We need that information from you. So the more information you can get to the appraiser, the better. I like to have it all in MLS because then I can look it on the comps also. I will look up disclosure reports. I will look up inspection reports in MLS for my comps. So the more information you can have out there as public information, or at least public in the real estate industry, helps us all out completely. If there's something I need to know about the property, let me know before I ever go there. The seller's agent has our information. Now, I don't know how you do it in Ohio, but when I get an order, I just set it up through showing time, just like I would as a realtor. So the listing agent has all my contact information. Listing agent knows I'll be out there Wednesday at 2 p.m. I may have a window of time between 2 and 3. But so anything you need me to know about the house, as far as anything unusual, how many offers you had, don't talk about value, what kind of condition it's in, what updates, or if, hey, the kitchen was remodeled by so-and-so company, and by the way, a house across the street also had that same kitchen remodeled by the same company, and it just sold last month. Tell me stuff like that before I ever come to the property, okay? It helps me get my information together. Where we are, realtors are almost never at the property when appraisers are. Are they, do the realtors meet appraisers?
I'm not too sure. I don't want to give an answer on that.
Okay. In other parts of the country, appraisers don't even have lockbox access and they expect the realtor to be there. So whatever's typical for your area, go with, or whatever your client wants you to do, go with. But here's my thing. If you're going to meet me at the property, let me know. Because as I said, I usually set it up as a window of time. And if I set it between 2 and 3 and I'm going to get there at 2:45 and you've been sitting there since 2, we're going to start off kind of awkward already. If you meet me there and you have information to give me, fine, I'll take all your information. But don't follow me around. I have to take, yeah, well, I cannot tell you how many people, mostly the homeowners if they're there, but some realtors also. And here's the kitchen and this is the bathroom. Like, I know. Can you step aside so I can take a photo of the kitchen? Can you please move so I can take a photo of this? And you know how hard it is to write something down when someone's talking to you? You end up writing down what they said instead of what you need to write down. So if you are advocating for your seller and the stuff you need me to know, meet me there. Tell me you're going to meet me there. Tell me the information and then go sit in your car. Or after I've taken a picture of the living room, have a seat in the living room and I'll come back and find you before I leave. But don't follow me around pointing things out. And here's the kitchen. We are not adversaries. But so often there does get to be a little bit of disrespect on both sides. And again, when a normal market is there, we're kind of in agreement. We're kind of doing the same thing. And the value ends up being pretty much right there because it worked itself out.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It sounds like most of the time, you know, that you aren't going to run into issue. And in normal market times that you are going to be on the same page, that only in these extreme circumstances, which we just saw and hopefully just coming out of, you know, with COVID and some of the craziness there. But a lot of the times it can be a really healthy and flourishing relationship, it sounds like, if you know, things are normal and in stable condition.
Yes. And as a realtor, I would say get to know some of your appraisers. By the way, you mentioned, does the realtor pick the appraiser? Those days are long gone. The realtor can't have anything to do about picking the appraiser. Even the loan officer can't have anything to do about picking the appraiser. One of the rules that went into play is that anybody who gets a commission off of whether or not the loan closes cannot be the one who decides who the appraiser is. So loan officers can't decide who the appraiser is, but they can have a staff member who is paid a salary who gets to choose the appraiser. Okay. So you don't get to choose your appraiser anymore. There are all kinds of cases of realtors blackballing appraisers and saying they won't let that appraiser in their house. That's completely against code of ethics and against the rules, because again, we're supposed to be completely independent. So, but get to know your appraiser. I got a lot of my business over the years because I am a speaker and because I do both sides. I go into the morning meetings, the weekly meetings that real estate offices have. I'm doing one by Zoom next week. Just to talk to them about the appraisal world, because we work kind of in secret. People don't know what we do as appraisers. We go in, nobody's there. We go home, we create a report, and they're waiting on pins and needles, and they don't have any say over what happened. So if you know an appraiser, ask them if they'll come just answer some questions. Come in and talk to my office for 15 minutes and tell us what we should have fixed before the FHA appraiser ever comes out to the house.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to help take that stigma out of it. You know, get to know it. We are all people. We are all in this industry, you know, for the same reasons, because we love homeownership. We love homes. And you know, that's ultimately all of our same goal, is to provide that American dream to our clients. So love that. I think that's great advice. And Zoe, this was so much fun and so fantastic. I love talking to you. I love hearing a little bit more about your world. I hope our realtors listening are going to take some of this advice, get to know the people that they're working with. And I think this was really great. So thank you so much for coming on and for your time today.
Thank you. I hope it's helpful. And maybe we'll talk about measuring next time.
Yes. Yeah. We'll come back and do a whole other episode on that for sure. Again, so much for joining in. To all of our listeners, thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back with you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Real View. That wraps up today's episode. You can keep up with the latest on the podcast at ohiorealtors.org/TheRealView and on Apple or Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Have questions, comments, or suggestions? We want to hear from you. Email us at podcast@ohiorealtors.org. We'll see you next time.